You are now listening to the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. For more information, visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann, and today I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres. Big winning streak, and free Manny.
Free Manny, free Manny, Nick, we'll get to that. Yeah, they're 38 and 37. They just swept the Brewers, and now they're on their way to Pittsburgh. Yeah. We're also joined by Ghost of Ray Kroc, the author of The Hangover.
Thank you. Yeah, that's really not my most proud moment, but okay, whatever.
Hey, man, you're killing it with that post. That's great. So is that up already?
No.
Okay, just checking. No pressure.
Well, the game's been over for like an hour.
Depends when this comes out.
Oh, yeah, it will be up. Yeah. Yes. Cool. Well, we're joined by a very special guest, Annie Halbron. Is that how you say it?
Sorry. It is how you say it. I'm so excited to be here. And with Ghost of Ray Kroc, who I literally was like, wait, who are you? And then I remembered, oh, ghost. Because, you know, you just only see the ghost part of it. Right. So it's like to see the living person is I feel like that's more the celebrity than me, you know?
Yeah, he is. He's connected to everybody.
There is no celebrity in this world. In this body right now. So
just Twitter handles.
That's right. No, I really appreciate you guys having me. This is fun.
Well, yeah, it's been a fun season so far. You know, let's go back to like Tuesday night, which Logan Allen's debut. You were down there for that, right? So what was that? That seemed like a magical night at Petco.
Yeah, it was a really cool night. I mean, we can go a bunch of different directions. We can go with his 7 shutout innings or the John Cena connection or a little bit of all of it. But, you know, I think it has been fun to watch these guys come up this year. Logan being just one of these young pitchers, these rookies that have gotten a chance to make a debut. And, I mean, he did so well. You know, I mean, you think of, like, how do you want your debut to go? And it's like, oh, 7 shutout innings, your first major league hit and a run scored. Okay, yeah, you'll take that. You know, and John Cena wearing your jersey, cheering for you, in the owner's suite. I mean, like, it can't get much better than that, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think the only thing probably for him would be if his brother, Philip, would have been able to be there. Of course, he's got a handicapped brother with, it's been termed as severe cerebral palsy. Mm. So he couldn't make the trip, but you know, he's so close with him that it was such a cool story that, you know, for him to do that, I think like it meant a lot for him and his brother.
Yeah. Did you watch it?
I did. And the brother angle is very cool. There was a button shared, and it's cool now how with Twitter and everything, like it's being shared on TV, and
yeah,
the person that got it was revealed. And it was just like such a cool thing.
Yes.
Community outside of the game that was happening last night. Yeah,
there was a fan who, and I, you guys might have her name handy, but it's, I know, yeah, you'll find it, Ghost.
Ghost is on it.
She handed a button with a picture of Logan and his brother to someone in the bullpen. And anyway, it got to Darren Balsley, and Balsley gave it to Logan before the game, and it was just so emotional for him. But then after the game, Logan was saying, you know, I really wish I knew who the fan was.
Yeah, because like on the post-game interview or whatever.
And then you know, it's like you post that on Twitter, and luckily, you know, Twitter's so great sometimes, right?
That
they can come through and they can find the woman who did it. And so I think that's like a really cool story. That's like when Twitter works for good, you know?
Yes.
The good of people.
Yes.
Well, working with Fox Sports San Diego, do you have, like, when you have a night like that, when there's a debut happening, do you guys have a strategic idea of when you want to, like, talk to the family if they're available and how that goes?
Or? No, it's a great question. So more times than not, you try to talk to the family. Like, more times than not, you're like, okay, who's going to be there? Mom, dad, whoever. Where are they sitting? Can we talk to them? They were sitting in the Ron Fowler seats. I think that they were given those seats to sit in that night. And so I think that the way that the camera angles were, because those are so forward facing to the field, like there's nowhere you can shoot that without being on the field of play. So I think the family just said, we'd like to sit in the seats and we're good, you know, with no interview. But more times than not, like you want to get that moment with the family, definitely. And the family's always so fun, you know, like the family's always like, so happy, and it's like the nice pure side of baseball, right?
Yeah, I mean, with this one with the John Cena story,
yeah,
coming in and you know elevating it in a certain way. I mean, that I saw that he gave the dollar
today. On the mound. You know, there's like this intricate story of him and Colin Young, who is now the left-handed batting throws batting practice. Like it's an intricate story, and he and Cena, and they're all friends, but they just randomly, you know, met Logan Allen in a restaurant in Florida last year, and they thought Logan Allen was being, you know, taken advantage of by agents. It wasn't that, but anyways, They talked for hours and hours, and then John Cena's stayed his, you know, number one support, and they exchanged that dollar bill that he bet him that he wouldn't make the big leagues as like kind of motivation, and he bet him that, and they exchanged that today on the mound, and you know, you got this little moment. But I mean, you know, John Cena in a Padres jersey with Logan Allen's number on the back, I mean, come on, you know, you can't get that kind of marketing if you tried.
He looks like he could just play, maybe.
Yeah, he does.
He looks like a toolsy, you know,
five tool player.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
I
was gonna say it's pretty nuts with all the family stories that are possible this year with all the call-ups. I mean,
it seems like a
being an emotional guy, I don't remember seeing so many stories that are like, wow, that is very emotional. There's families and there's all these things going on this year.
There really are. I think just with all these young guys coming up, like there's just so many moving parts, and it feels like every few weeks we're having a story. Maybe not with John Cena, but every few weeks we're kind of getting into like a good story or a good storyline. And I think that's been fun. You know, it's been fun to kind of get to know these guys. And as a team wins too, I think what's interesting about some of these stories that I get to do is like, you can't do them really if the team is losing, like not a family one you can always do.
Right.
Other ones like that, like, you know, the team has to be kind of doing well for guys to want to talk about certain things that are like more fun or things like that. So it's been nice to have that, because I cannot remember the last time I was in June and able to like put together kind of a fun feature without players looking at me like they want to, you know, shoot my head off. So
The Padres graphic department made a good investment on the welcome to the show graphic.
Yeah.
They just keep replacing that sucker all the time. It's pretty amazing.
Right. Well, you know what's funny too is they told me that they had asked John Cena. So they put up a video with John Cena yesterday, and they had asked him to come in last week. Because they were like, okay, he's going to make his debut at some point. And they had heard Cena was in San Diego. So they were like, well, let's just tape this. And, you know, we'll see like when he's going to make his debut, we'll just have it ready. And then it turns out it was the following week. So it just like worked out perfectly for them. Yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, yesterday there was a lot of stuff happening, you know, on the negative side with Manny Machado and everything that had happened. I mean, he's been playing great. He's hitting, he's heating up, you know, but,
yes.
There was some stuff with the major league umpires. They got on Twitter and tweeted something out that was pretty inappropriate, I think, for the Major League Baseball Umpires Association to tweet. We know what the tweet was. There was a lot of hashtags. Yeah. It seemed like somebody didn't really use the form that often, but
or was like a 12-year-old.
But
did
so
it,
you
maybe?
Have a, yeah.
It was very like teenage angst.
Yes.
Like it was very
I mean, that's just got to be a weird. I mean, you're down there. To, you know, you have Logan Allen having this life-changing moment, and you have Manny Machado who's, you know, being persecuted, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there were several videos I did for the Union Tribune these last few days on that, and it's like you never enjoy those that much because it's like, you know, it's just there's so many different kind of moving parts, and you know, the player doesn't really want to talk about it, but then you know, it's kind of. Manny was great, but at the same time, it's like, I'm sure he's seeing that tweet going, what the heck, you know? And I mean, of course, to us media, you know, he was very professional about it. And he said, look, we're just waiting to be in front of Joe Torre and talk about the appeal. But it's, you know, it can make for kind of tense situations. But I think what it did is it got the ball rolling for like how much this Umpires Association can get away with everything. I mean, like they really have, you know, like a sweet union, because they have kind of full reign, you know, it's like who's, you know, they don't really get reprimanded. Now, MLB did put out that statement, which I thought was really good, saying that it was unprofessional. But for Manny, you know, for a player, it's like you just want to play. Like you don't want to sit there and talk about, you know, things that you know could potentially get you in trouble if you say the wrong thing, but at the same time you're mad, so you might say the wrong thing. And, you know, so it's just this whole cat and mouse game, but we survived it.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to plead his case. I mean, he's going to make his appeal, and everybody, you know, we'll find out how that goes, I guess. But I wonder if he would just rather just take a day off and just be past it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, you know, it's one game. But I think for him, it's kind of the point that, you know, the ejection happened so quickly for arguing balls and strikes. Now, it's interesting because what they said later, they didn't say that originally it was because of the bat throw and things like that. They said it was because he was arguing and he made contact, which that's kind of a gray area. But the ejection, I didn't see contact either, but the ejection came so quickly that I think that's kind of where they're going is like, hey, I just turned to say something to you and I got ejected. And you don't do that to every player on the league, you know? So I think they're going to kind of have to do like pre-ejection and after ejection and kind of figure that out with Major League Baseball. I almost got in trouble there with like, yes. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. And I think there is no hearing or no date set yet for
the appeal or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
They go to New York in July. So
maybe something like that.
They're playing in July. So.
Yeah, exactly.
This has really got me kind of baffled. And I'm the last person to ever be for a robotic strike zone. Like, you know, robots doing this. I actually like arguments between. I like the human element.
Part of the charm of the game. Like, it connects to the old.
There's been some good, you know, face-to-face manager, umpire. Yeah. It's fun. What's crossing the line is where Manny is being, like, singled out here and not doing anything that everyone else doesn't do.
Yeah.
And then we are seeing today, at least maybe I have my Padres glasses on, but, like, literal plays being kind of like, well, this is the Padres and they are Manny, so we're going to rule against them. Two kind of obvious plays, at least listening to the analysis where the home run came back in and the out at second, just a bunch of stuff that's going on now.
Yeah.
There were some calls last night that were just like, again, if you're going to call an outside low pitch a strike, just do it for both sides and we're all good. And then both sides can be mad at you, but don't do it against certain players. I guess there seems to be a major bias against Manny and I don't understand why. He's been nothing but amazing since he came to San Diego. And the whole reputation around him is like a media narrative. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm blown away at how a player's, the ump union can get away with just such obvious bias. I mean, they are who we thought they were.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting because I think that the Umpires Association maybe dug themselves, you know, on this one because whereas Manny, I think before that tweet happened, I think Manny still would have gotten the suspension.
They had the higher ground for
sure. Yeah, and then once this happened, it sort of switched where it's like, well, now it's like, how are you going to suspend the guy after your association puts out like the most ridiculous, you know, childish tweets and Facebook posts? Like, how are you really? Because you know, it's just gonna look so bad if they do that. But I think that's gonna follow Manny around for a while, and it kind of makes me laugh because he gets booed everywhere he goes. Like, it does not matter if he's played in that, you know, on that team or not. It's like every city. It's like people just like to kind of hate on him or whatever. But I also think the other side of that is the great ones get that sometimes, you know? Yeah. And so it's like, and he knows that, you know? So I think it's kind of like a, you know, a little bit of a sarcastic kind of wink, kind of, you know, whatever kind of thing. And then he goes out there and he hits a home run or whatever. And he kind of makes everyone, you know, puts them in their seats or whatnot. So, but I think it's going to follow him for a while. Definitely. Yeah.
I hate that they're making me want a robotic strike zone. Like, that is what's so, like, frustrating as a 42-year-old lifelong baseball fan. Like, why are you making someone who loves the purity of the game want to go this way? Because you are obviously not being unbiased. Like, you are not doing your job from a neutral point of view.
Yeah, I do think that, you know, I agree with you. I don't want robotic umps, but I think things like that make you go, well, that would at least be better, you know?
Yeah.
Do you hear things in the, like, general, you don't name names, but, like, are they, like, bring on the robots?
No, it's so funny, you know? It's so funny because especially on the road, we get into these discussions, which is awesome. I like these discussions, like, with players talking about whether they would prefer robotic umps or not. I would say, you know, 3 out of 4 would rather not have robotic umps, but there are, you know, a player here or there that says, yeah, why not? Like, you know, it's already, you know, you're already seeing the strike zone on TV and this and that. But most players like the same thing that you just mentioned. And I get it because I like it too. is like the human element, like the, but you would hope with the human element, if you're going to be wrong, just be wrong across the board or whatever, you know, like play it for both sides. After this happened with Manny, just talking to guys in the clubhouse this week about it, you know, like they did talk a lot about how, you know, these umpires are untouchable. Like instead of the player mm-hmm. maybe having the benefit of the doubt or the player being protected, it's the umpires who are protected and the umpires who get the benefit of the doubt and the umpires who get to sort of exert their power. And so I think it's really kind of these situations bring out for players, you know, they're never going around bashing umpires all the time, but it just brings out kind of like the inequality of the system right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I heard, I don't know who said it, but I think it might have been Jesse Agler on one of the broadcasts talk about how they're, you know, it really is unfair for the umpires to have the strike zone on TV because everybody gets to see, you know, what their mistakes are. And mm-hmm. maybe there's a heightened sensitivity on their end because of that. I would understand that, actually, just because it's like you're have constantly you ever, being
you
shown you're wrong.
Have you noticed Jay Posner?
Oh yeah, he
tweets out when they call a, you know, outside strike and stuff like that, and he's always on the MLB app and screenshotting everything, and it's like that's the problem is everybody has more information than they did 20 years ago.
Yeah,
right.
So
And players sometimes tell me that the strike zone on TV is off a little or can be wrong or like that they, you know, it can show pitches that are
doesn't adjust to their size. Right.
Doesn't adjust they sometimes say that, but forgive me, what did you just say? Because I was gonna add that
I think it was Jesse, but I think it was like could there be a heightened sensitivity?
Yes, the answer is yes.
Because just in general there's so much criticism online anyways,
yes,
besides balls and strikes, but the strike zone being on TV allows the audience to say, oh, this guy's an idiot.
Yeah.
And these guys are humans. They feel that too. I don't know.
There was one player in particular talking, and I didn't get him on the record, so I won't say his name, but he was talking about that today, and he said the exact same thing. He said, you know, these guys are so upset because they're getting, you know, they're getting killed on social media. They're getting this and that. But they signed up for the job, just like we signed up for the job, and social media has come around and we get killed for things and they get killed for things. And that's just what it is, you know? So, yeah. So I think that their feeling on it, or at least a few of them was, you know, we have to go through the same thing. Why should they complain about it or be, you know, consider themselves the victim, I guess.
Well, if you could have a robotic balls and strikes machine or whatever, you know, you wouldn't take away jobs from the union, right? You'd have you'd still have a guy behind home plate. So I don't. I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
I don't even know how it would work.
The best way I've heard it working is that the umpire at home plate would have an earpiece, and it would give him a signal if it's not a strike or it is a strike.
That would be fine.
I mean, he can
make
the call.
I'm wrong. Get it right.
I mean, if we can't, quick. I don't see this happening.
The union protect that.
No. Yeah, right.
They should try it in one of like the minor league. You know, they should try it in like the California League or something like that.
Frontier League. Let's do everything else in the Frontier League.
Yeah, give it a whirl.
I mean, could you imagine? We can't even get the NL to have the DH. I mean, the writing that would come out of this, the old guard protecting the sanctity of the game. I mean, it'd be fun to read just that response.
It would. There's a lot to this umpire situation. There's definitely, I think, an HBO documentary about how this union got all its power and how it's just stayed this little tiny ball of power forever and holding America's pastime hostage literally many ways.
Well, and there was a guy telling me today that, like, you know, you have to be careful because if you get on the bat, he's like, we try to make friends with the umpires because if you get on the bad side of the umpire, like, I was like, he's going to take it personal, right? And he's like, yeah, like, he treats it personally. And every time you see him at every game for the rest of your career, you're going to get kind of. And so, I mean, that's the mentality that these players are doing is,
jeez,
you know, so I think that's really interesting, you know, because it's like, you know, there is politics to it, you know? And so.
It sounds like I'm talking bad about the umpires tonight, and I better like look out my window tonight and make sure there's no like black cars, you know, parked out. It sounds like the kind of organization they're running over.
Joe West is going to come find you.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Who are these people?
True.
It's this really weird job that has a significant amount of power. Kind, I mean, for how big the game is now, and the union's probably been around as long as the players' union.
How long? They resigned. I don't know, actually. Okay. They all resigned in '99.
Oh.
And oh, right. I do remember this.
They dissolved
now.
The union.
popping in with that history.
And then, well, I mentioned it yesterday on somebody else brought it up, and I'm like, remember when they dissolved the union? And no one cared.
Yeah.
they all yeah. quit, and everyone went fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what they yeah. all the umpires quit, and so MLB just said fine, and they hired a bunch of minor league umpires, and it took them like 2 years to get most of their jobs back.
Huh. Well, I mean, there are umpires though that clearly should not be umpires anymore. Like,
right.
Like, and it's like it's just kind of like, you know, and I don't want to discriminate against you guys, but it seems like kind of just like a kind of a guys' club, like
well,
a little
that's
boys'
what
club.
I'm trying to get
and
at.
They're
no,
you know, like
no
it's,
go there more.
Yeah,
it's like an
I mean,
old boys' club.
Yeah,
that's horrible.
Like so. I mean, yeah. that's the unfortunate part. Is like, you know, come on, that's the best you guys can get. You're Major League Baseball. You know.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, Manny's not suspended yet. He's here, and it's fun, and
yes.
he's influencing, I hope, Fernando Tatis Jr., my Lord and Savior. I love him. I just love watching every minute of him
yes.
on a baseball field. How has your job changed from last year? I mean, it's night and day?
I think it's night and day. I mean, yeah. again, a few reasons. You know, Manny being one of them, the team doing well, you know, just kind of gelling more, having more storylines and things like that. But the addition of Fernando Tatis Jr., like, I think, to me, it's the biggest. Like, it's just – and maybe you wouldn't have that as big if you didn't have Manny and you didn't have all these other moving parts. So I think it all does go together. But and Fran Millen and whatnot. But Tatis is just like, I mean, for being 20 years old and being as talented as he is, and then just also understanding like the personality part of it. And I don't think he doesn't force it in any ways, but he's just he's laid back when he needs to be. And usually that's, you know, when he's off the field. He's very honest. He's open. I hope he stays like that because it's really just a breath of fresh air. Like he's just being himself. And it was really cool when he made his debut and his family was here. And I got to see him interact with his family. And, like, they are just – I think where he gets it is, like, he's just got a really close family. They're very tight-knit. They're very down-to-earth. His dad is the same way. His mom is seemed like a wonderful woman. And he's got all these sisters and brothers. And I just think that – and family means so much to him that I just think, you know, he was raised well. And he just understands, like, you know, like, to play the game right and to be the best, you know, kind of person that he is, you know, that he can be. But just, I mean, you watch him play and it's like my mouth, I'll be sitting in the press box and like there'll be times in every game that my mouth just drops open. I'm like, what? Yeah. What? You know, and you think you're watching like some grizzly old veteran out there and it's like Tatis and he's just doing amazing thing after amazing thing. And
yeah, you can't even buy him a beer.
I know.
I was thinking.
It's incredible.
If we go to the playoffs this year, like,
yeah.
Have they had situations before where they had like the alcohol-free section of the locker room?
Right? You just don't get that part on video.
I think you turned.
Yeah. Like, the Padres could get in trouble for distributing alcohol to a minor, could they not?
I think Tatis turns 21 this year.
I think he does too. Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, if they bring up Urias again,
he's still
20.
He's 20.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. I'm willing to sacrifice the playoffs this year so he can properly celebrate, you know, for years to come.
It is, though. It is, like, I just think, like, what would that clubhouse be without Tatis? And I just don't think it's – yeah, we saw what that clubhouse is. And it's still – they still won. They still were getting – gelling and everything like that. But when Tatis came back, it's just like this, like, you know, lightning burst of energy. You know, it's just like he just brings that to the veterans. He brings that to the rookies. He's just – and then he does it with the way he plays. Like, it's not like he's, you know, manufacturing something. Like, he just plays – you watch him, he's like – his uniform's – dirty front and back at the end of every game.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, it's like watching like a dramatic play. Like it's like, you know, like or yeah. like a theater, you know, it's just
what's
it's
he
crazy.
Gonna do tonight to start us off?
Yeah. 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 Like. Yeah, you're just eating your popcorn and watching Tatis.
I missed
how is he on base again? How is that possible?
I think it was last night and I missed his at bat, but I walked in the room and he had just come off the field and he's dirty and I'm like, oh god,
yeah.
what happened?
That's the one thing that you hope with him is he does play so hard and so like he's so aggressive that you are like, oh god, like don't get injured, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you told him to pull it back, that's when he would get injured more most likely because he'd be in his head too much,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
So I think he just has to go out there, do that, and then you take, you know, if there is something that comes up along the way, you just take that along with the good that he brings, you know. In of course, you never want an injury, but you guys understand what I'm saying. If it's going to happen, it's how he plays, and they're not going to try to, you know, change that at this point.
Yeah. If it's going to happen, it should be doing a full front split. You know?
Right.
Being from the theater myself, I know how difficult that is. And hey, if you gotta go down, that's a very impressive way to do it.
I grew up dancing, yeah. And I'm like, are you kidding? Like he's in a full. It's not even like his yeah. foot is turned.
There's
out.
The side split. He's, you know, I know yes. how to do the. I can't do them, but I know what those are. But when you go that way, you're
right.
It's a whole new ball
it's
game.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Did you guys know
yeah.
that the Padres are professional dancers now? they, because yeah. every day, yeah. right, they're doing bits.
Yeah. Yes. There's like ballerina the salsa, type patches. Yeah. There's, oh, you know, man. Like it's yeah, it's fun. I will say too, the Dominican players. With Fran Mill, with Margot, with Tatis, like they do add this like element to the team that is like it's just fun. It's yes. just a lot of fun. Their culture is a lot of fun, and they don't, you know, they embrace it, and it's and so does the rest of their team, and it's just really fun.
Well, and the fans have embraced it too. I
definitely
mean, we love it. I don't know that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna ask about Tatis one more thing, but like you know, he's a second generation pro. Do you notice anything different with those guys? Like they, not that he doesn't respect the clubhouse or anything, but there is something about not being completely blown away by that environment. Right. I mean,
yeah, I think it's funny you said that because I think it can go both ways. I think that, you know, I've seen players come up that are second generation or, you know, in whatever sport, and they're like, oh, this is no big deal. I've been coming to the ball yard for forever, whatever, you know, like blah, blah, blah.
You hear the Barry Bonds
yeah,
stories.
You know,
yeah,
you know, so, you know, it's kind of, but you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. But no, Tatis, like you could tell that it meant a lot to him, and that his dad, you know, like he there's just such a great dynamic there. It's like, you know, and he's worked for everything that he's gotten, and he's had to be patient, and he had that injury last year. He thought he was going to come up last year, and he had that injury. So I think just the way, and then playing in the Dominican over the offseason, like that, like I just feel like that flipped a switch for him. That was something that he couldn't expect, you know. So I think all this added up to, but I don't feel at all like he is ungrateful or like he isn't savoring the moment. Like, I think he really, really appreciates. I think it's the opposite. I think like he is like, he understands the magnitude of it and he is grateful for it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's who I want to be when I grow up. So,
well, you know, Ryan Weathers is going to be the same, right? I mean, his dad play. Yeah. It's all over sports yeah. now. I mean, yes. just there's so many pro kids that are coming yeah. up. It's like, it's incredible. Yeah. yeah. With Tatis, I mean, we haven't probably seen somebody this exciting this early since probably LT in San Diego. Just like
that's
a football player.
yeah, maybe.
I know, but you know what I mean. Like,
I mean,
where he's just
Kawhi
great.
Was fun to watch at State.
Sure,
I remember,
yeah.
like
I'm just
my
of, like,
San Diego State basketball days were Kawhi days. But yeah, he's. I don't
fair.
Remember watching a baseball player like this.
I
honestly,
I mean,
like,
Tony
this,
didn't start off like this.
Right.
Like,
no, and just, I don't know, he glows on the field, and it's not because of his hair. You know what I mean? Like, he's got this aura about him.
The closest thing I can come up with that is Khalil Green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. It was excitement as far as, like, pure.
Because he just blew everybody away in spring training, and he came up and blew everybody away in the major leagues.
Yeah.
Yes. Tatis is probably 1,000 times more fun. As much as
right.
I love Khalil,
right?
Yeah, but yeah,
but it's the closest thing I can come up
yes,
with.
It's
yeah,
a good,
yeah,
good
yeah.
Comment. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, so but Manny's here too. I mean, like, is he taking over as like a leader? Would you say? And how
yeah,
does that manifest
I think,
itself?
I think Eric Hosmer is
the leader.
Pretty much the leader. Yeah, but Manny, especially, I think, you know, guys, there are a lot of leaders like Craig Stammen. You know, I would say even Matt Strom in a lot of situations. Even Kinsler, but Manny, absolutely. Like, and Fernando for Manny is a big one. You know, mm-hmm. like their lockers are next to each other in the clubhouse. You see them on the field always like jabbing at each other and kind of like, you know, friendly, like going at each other. And so I think that for Tatis, having Manny there is huge. I just think it's huge. And Manny is going to kind of give him, you know, all the advice and expertise that he can. And at the same time, I think Tatis kind of rejuvenates Manny in a lot of ways. So it's a really, that's why I think like if you had one without the other, I don't think it would be near as dynamic, but the two of them kind of, you know, working in sync and then having Hosmer and having, you know, whoever on the pitching staff and this and that, like it just kind of all adds together right now. And I think that's what's making it work. Like, I've been in clubhouses before. Every clubhouse will be like, oh, we love our guys, blah, blah, blah. You
yeah.
know, or like every team or
doing
every locker room.
Yeah, yeah.
But they really do have a good clubhouse. Like you know, rarely do you see any kind of clicks. In fact, I haven't seen any this season. But, you know, you don't see like, oh, the pitchers are over here talking to each other. And, you know, here's Tatis and Manny over here talking to each other. Like everybody is across the clubhouse all the time sitting next to, you know, the other guys from other positions and this and that. Like it's very fluid, and they seem to all really gel pretty well together.
Yeah.
We can thank Preller for that, right? Like, I think this is all part of his grand vision, Nick, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, does the power structure, like the leadership structure, is there like a designated guy for each phase? Like the Stammen would be the leader in the bullpen, you know?
I think they just took it over. Like, Stammen was the oldest one last year in that bullpen, and there was a lot of young guys there last year too. And Stammen just, like, he was like, I'm a structure guy. I want some structure. So, like, he started laying down, you know, like, here's where we're going to throw. Here's what we're going to do. Here's when we're going to meet for this. Here's when we're going to meet for that. And he I think it's what it is I just think certain guys gravitate to it naturally. And, like, Stammen was a big one. Like, they love Stammen. It doesn't matter if you're a starter, if you're a reliever. Like, these guys love and adore Craig Stammen. And so... For him, like, I think it just came naturally, and then, you know, he was the older guy in there, so we just kind of adopted it. Now they all call him Dad and everything, you know. But and then Matt Strom told me, you know, he kind of did the same thing for the rotation this year. Yeah. But even the rotation guys still go to Stammen, you know, like every okay. Strom too. Like a lot of people go to Stammen, but
how old is Stammen exactly?
Stammen is 30 something. Okay. I want to say 35, maybe 30, somewhere around there. Sorry to Craig Stammen if I just aged you. He's there. I might have given him a few years there. But Strom said he watched Clayton Richard last year, and Clayton did that. And so he kind of came in and did set some of those things for the starter. So I just think that there are certain guys that just kind of step up and take it. But you can't really take it if you're not well-respected or liked. So I think that it's worked out where, like, you have guys that have, assume that position, but also are the right guys for that role.
Yeah, I've always wondered, like, how that works. Maybe this is such a fun clubhouse, but, like, in other clubhouses, would there be a separation between the guys that have established really big contracts with the guys who are still
Definitely.
Trying to get their first big payday? You know, that would be something that would probably be a divider.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I've heard guys talk about that before when they come into clubhouses and the veterans won't talk to them, like, don't say two words to them until midseason, you know, or something like that. Like, I've had guys tell me that. So I think that you absolutely can have that kind of, or, you know, just guys not concerning themselves with the rest of the clubhouse or not, you know, thinking that they're just going to go in and get out and things like that. It really only takes one. I can tell you this was it 2015 when they had that loaded big year? I can tell you, it only takes one.
Yeah.
And that clubhouse is bad news, bad vibes. Yeah. So,
listeners,
y'all can guess which one. You know, so, but then it spreads because I think, you know, especially the young players, it's funny. Like, there was a night that Kirby Yates, that time that he gave up this year,
LA
gave up
the non-save situations. Yeah.
And then we were in the clubhouse and he came right to his locker. He said, I'm ready, guys, you know? And so there are guys that won't do that, that will hide from the media or that will, you know, but when he did that, you could see every starter around the room watching him do that. So it's like, you hope, like, that's your best case scenario is that you've got some veteran guys and they tell me, you know, Trevor Hoffman did that after every blown save, no matter what, like, he always stood by his locker. And you just hope that you get guys like that because the young guys are going to learn from the older guys. And if you come up in a clubhouse where the older guys are like, no, let's, like, just stay in the training room until, you know, the media closes and, you know, like, let's, you know, this and that, which happens all the time. Then the young guys are going to come up that way and they're going to think it's no big deal. We don't have to talk to you. I'm going from the side of media, but it can be anything. It can be, we don't have to shag. We don't have to put our work in here. We don't have to do, you know, whatever they're learning from the guys above them. So I think it can really be detrimental to someone's career if they come up in the wrong way, for sure.
And Hosmer's generally, like, the vocal one in the clubhouse?
Hosmer, you know, from what all the guys tell me, vocal, yes, but also just genuinely cares for, like, every player in that clubhouse. Like, Greg Garcia was telling me, and he was with the Cardinals, so he had some really, you know, good players around him and good leaders, and he said it's as good as when I was with the Cardinals. He said he has a way of connecting whether you're a superstar like Manny Machado or you're a rookie that's getting paid the league minimum. He has a way of connecting with every player and making you feel like you are just as important as the next guy. And so to that point, I think that you do get guys that are in their league minimum, probably not going to stay in the clubhouse long, that, you know, they come up, no one really talks to them that much, or a guy like Eric Hosmer definitely doesn't talk to them, you know, in their mind. Right. And then instead you come up and a guy like Eric Hosmer now knows the name of your mom and sister and, you know, dog that you had, you know, like there's just these things that I think that like he does. And I don't think it's forced. I think it's just who he is and how he assumes that role. And I think he really is interested. But I think also the way he works and I think the way he kind of goes about his business and the fact that he's been like not too high, not too low, no matter what he's going through. They said even when he's going through the slump that he did at the beginning of the season, he still was super, you know, happy, because you do get that. You guys can imagine you're going through a slump for a month or two,
yeah,
or a month, whatever, 6 weeks, and you come to the ballpark like you are not a happy camper usually, you know. But he would come and he'd be positive and he treated everyone the exact same as if he, you know, was hitting 350 or whatever. So I think it's things like that, that when you're a player and you've seen guys do it the other way, you appreciate the guys who do it in that way where it's not tense and it's not, you know, bothersome and things like that. Like, he's still such a part of the team even if he's going through a slump.
I love it. I love hearing about that.
Well, what's your opinion of Andy Green? It's his fourth year as a manager now, and you know, you've done some post game stuff with him. You do post game stuff with him, but like, you know, are there certain days where you like kind of recalibrate how you approach him on wins,
you know,
losses? Or?
Andy is really consistent, which I think is really nice as far as a media perspective. Like, if he isn't going to tell you something, he still treats you like a human being and you know, is kind of point blank about it. Like, you know, I'm just not going to talk about that. But it's really rare. Like, he'll usually talk, especially if he knows, you know, you're a media member that's there every day and you're asking questions and he's trying to understand like what you're trying to get at. And it's kind of that give and take. But he's really consistent, at least consistent for us, you know, whether they win or they lose. I think Andy Green is in a position where, you know, if they win, I think it has been interesting the fact that they are a game over 500 at this point in the season. Like, when's the last time we could talk about the Padres in June, like a game over 500, right? But so I think, like, you know, they've dipped below 500 several times this season and then they've gotten back to 500 or above 500. I think it's funny with Andy because he doesn't get any credit if they win, but he gets killed if they lose or, you know, if things go wrong. I don't know, you know, what makes, and I've talked to players about this too, like, you know, the players in the clubhouse, obviously, you know, in really supportive of Andy Green, but, it's hard to say, you know, like, you know, what takes you to that next level or how much a manager influences kind of getting to that next level. But I do think that Andy knows and the whole organization knows that their feet are to the fire. I mean, you're getting into these years where there's these heightened expectations every single year and you're going to have to prove that you are going to meet those expectations, because now, you know, remember a few years ago, someone would tell me, you know, when you would look around the infield and it was like,
Alexi Ramirez. Who was
it? Yeah, okay, okay, okay. I knew you guys would know the names. Couldn't remember. My brain is so fried, but exactly.
Perella's all around.
Yes. And you're just, yeah, Perella's all around, exactly. And
or Amarisa all around.
I met Jose Perella. He's a nice guy.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, well, you know, that's just how it is. Whatever, you know, it's like, that's, you know, who you have right
Pod
now.
Dressing.
Yeah, yeah. And now it's like, oh no, you don't pull it. You know, you're going to stand next to Hosmer and Tatis and Machado. Like, you know, you better be able to pull your weight or you're going to, we're going to find someone else. Or at least that's what you would hope it would be getting towards. So I think that it's a really interesting time. I think that their roster still isn't where they want it to be. And so for them to be at 500 does speak to Andy and to, I think, the players policing their clubhouse well as well. Because that's what you would hope for. You don't want Andy Green policing the clubhouse. You want the veteran guys or the guys who are the leaders policing the clubhouse. That's when it works best. And I think that they're getting closer to that culture now.
Very cool. Oh, man. Their roster to me has got – it's got a lot of questions. And we're coming up on that time of year where are they like sellers or buyers,
yeah,
right? Like,
well,
our outfield
yeah.
is so stacked right now. I don't even – I can't wrap my brain around all the power we have out there.
With the trade deadline coming, I mean, is there like a recalibration for you when you're talking to these guys? Like, say a Kirby Yates gets tossed around, which might happen, you know, like gets tossed around for 2 weeks. Does that change the way you navigate, like, approaching him?
Yeah.
How does that work?
I'll still approach him, you know, either way. But the conversation starts of those difficult questions, which is like, you know, how you feel about being traded, you know? And it's like, on the one hand, it's a great compliment if you're in the conversation about being traded. Obviously, you're going to help another team probably, you know, contend for a championship. But at the other hand, you know, it's like, it's hard to, your whole family, like, you're rooted in San Diego, your wife, with these players, what we had to do it with Brad Hand last year. And Brad was really, really well spoken about it in the sense that, like, his wife, like, you know, that's who's freaking out usually. Like, it's like the player's wife, and they're following every, you know, they're the ones looking on social media, and they're the ones following all the rumors, and they're the ones, you know. And then it's so interesting too, because when the player gets traded, it's the wife that has to pack up the house. Like, the player just, like, leaves, right?
Yeah.
The wife has to pack up the house, has to find the new, you know, whatever, this and that. So I think the stress more for them, honestly, is like all these extraneous things, all these things about your family and your kids and your schools and your this and your that, and like kind of hearing that. But at the same time, I think there is, like, you know, it's bittersweet if you're gelling in a clubhouse like this and you're seeing some of the fruits of your labor coming together. I think that you do want to continue that with the guys around you, for sure, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Do you guys come up with your own trade scenarios, or how, I mean, where do we get these from? Because I threw a couple out this weekend after our you know, dip below 500. Ironically, now, and maybe it's not ironic, I don't, they now, our corner outfielders are now both above 20 home runs before the All-Star. I mean, these are the guys that I think could be on the chopping block.
Definitely, like, you're following,
where do you,
like,
go with that?
Right, like, you're looking at Hunter Renfrow, you're looking at Kirby Yates, you're looking, you know, who could be traded. Is, you know, would Franmil Reyes go, and would he be a designated hitter? Would there be something? You know, I mean, like, there's all these
guys have been crying in the outfield. I do remember past years when they thought about being traded. Yeah. So you have to approach them on
Preller
that.
Has a history of doing stuff at the All-Star game.
Yeah, like, they walk into the dugout and they're like, no, I think bye-bye.
I think, too, for these players, there is this sense of, like, what you just said, are we going to be sellers or buyers? Because in the players' minds right now, like, we're hovering around 500. Yes, we're obviously not where
the
Dodgers are.
We're the hardest division in the history of baseball. But
exactly. Yeah. But, you know, for them, it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, we need to be, you know, sellers. Buyers. We need to be, like, fortifying this team. We need to be making a push, right, or whatever, right? Like, we're, you know, we want to know. And then, of course, on the other side is, like, the organization that's looking, you know, also forward at the other years. And I think it might depend also on how realistic, like, how realistic is it that you can maybe get a wild card shot or something like that? I haven't even checked. Are they anywhere in that?
Yes, they are.
Okay. They're hovering around. Yeah.
As of this morning, I haven't, but the Cubs lost. So now they're like third or fourth in the wild card. So they're definitely in the hunt.
I think if it's, you know, if it gets more and more realistic, I think that the Padres would, I mean, this is just my opinion, and I could be, I hope you replay this to me if I'm wrong.
Put
it out on the Twitter.
You know Bobby's Twitter,
put it
right?
on the Twitter. Yeah. No, bring it on, guys. I already get
if you umpire, if the umpire's Twitter comes after Annie, we'll have
give him some more to talk about. I think that the organization would try to make a run at it. I do, because I just think that you've got to at that point be thinking, hey, we hope, you know, 20 and 21 and 22 are what we think that they are. But what if they're not? What if guys get hurt? What if people don't work out? Like, if you're in that and you haven't been in that in a long time, like, I think you have to honor that in some ways. Now, again, that is my opinion. But we'll see what happens, you know. Preller also historically, like, you know, he seems to, from the understanding I get is, like, he asked for a lot back. So it will also depend, I think, on, like, if they could get what they wanted, obviously, back, that would be, you know, worth that.
Yeah. Like, the only trade I can see for Yates working out, and it wouldn't really work out for us, but it's like Yates for Bellinger, right? Like, the Dodgers need a closer, even though we shouldn't trade in the same division.
Yates
but we
for
need
Bellinger?
Like, we need like a Bellinger back for that kind of thing.
Maybe.
So,
I don't know. I mean, there's going to be a contender that's going to be after him.
Yeah.
Because you see these playoff series, and it always comes down to the back end of your bullpen. And that's why the Indians went after Brad Hand.
You know, that's the other thing about Kirby is, like, so who's going to do it? You know, yeah, like who are you going to put in there? And then who are you going to find? Now, I think you also look at, I think Kirby's 32. And so I think, I don't know what the, well, gosh, I mean, look at, you know, Rivera and Hoffman and all them. So I don't know what the going age is now for relievers or whatever, but I think that you weigh all that together. But at the same time for the Padres, yeah, it's like, you know, like you have one of the best in the game and they're not easy to come by. They really aren't that easy to come by.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, so Andy, I mean, thanks for coming on. We're going to wrap up here. What do you do when you're not doing your 4,000 jobs?
Yes.
Do you just like unwind, like watch Netflix?
I cry. And,
yeah.
I feel like I cry.
Yeah, you're pretty amazing to follow because you're doing so many things.
Do you just like detach yourself from sports at all?
No,
like,
you know, I wish, I almost think it would be healthier if I did. And sometimes yeah. I'll be able to kind of, I try to detach myself from social media a little bit, but that is hard these days because it's like, you know, you get these like, I try to turn off my notifications, but still. But no, I think it's, I honestly, I feel really fortunate because right now between the Union Tribune and also with Fox Sports, like it's been a lot of fun. Like it's just been a lot of fun to do these stories and whatnot. And it's a lot, especially when they're in town. But it's, you know, then you figure, hey, you know, it ends in a few months and maybe it ends like even more surprising than we thought it would be. So, you know, you're kind of just grateful to be along for the ride and being able to do what I do. But no, I try to sleep. And I try to, honestly, I'm the most boring. I like sleep, do laundry, go grocery shopping. You know, if I can hang out with some friends, take a dance class, I do that.
We had Dennis Lynn on like last year.
Yeah.
And he was like, I need to do more unwinding, actually. Like, I swim sometimes. That's what he said.
Well, you always feel such a nice dumb. Guy. You're like, because like, you know, it's like you always are like, yeah, I have no life, you know, like it's yeah. It is what it is. It's good.
Well, thanks for coming down and talking more sports with us.
You guys are a blast. And really I look forward to listening to all your podcasts to come. And I would love to be back on at some point and appreciate you having me.
Yeah. Maybe sometime, you know, during the postseason.
There you go. You heard it here first.
All right. Well, you can follow the Ghost of Ray Kroc on Twitter. Ghost of RAK.
Yep, as usual.
And check out The Hangover tomorrow, today, probably.
Whatever. Coming soon.
Coming soon, yes.
And follow us at The Kept Faith and check out the Voice of San Diego stuff, voicesandiego.org, and become a member. They do a lot of great stuff for our community, and they let us use this place. So that's so nice of them. We'll be back next week, so keep the faith.
Go Padres.
Go Padres.
The show you just heard was part of the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. To hear other great shows like the Voice of San Diego Podcast, I Made It in San Diego, a show all about the people behind the region's businesses, the award-winning Culture Cast, The Kept Faith, a San Diego sports show, and more, please visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts. If you'd like to sponsor any of the podcasts, please email Aaron at voiceofsandiego.org. That's ERIN@VOSD.org.